Our next speaker is Joel Wilhite. He's a senior design systems engineer at Harmonic. Mr. Wilhite started his career at Devicom when the first commercial MP2 encoders were being launched. He is focused primarily on broadcast and contribution and distribution, but now concentrates on streaming solutions. Mr. Wilhite has had several positions within Harmonic during the last two decades and has contributed his system knowledge during the draft phase of several ATSC specifications and more recently for ATSC 3, where he has intensified his role to work more closely with other manufacturers to deliver these new technologies. Mr. Wilhite studied electronics engineering at DeVry University and served in the U.S. Navy aboard the USS Missouri. Here's Joel Wilhite.
Thank you.
Clock says 45, but I know I'm up against your lunch, so I will try desperately to compress my talk into a much shorter form. So here we go. It's already started. You know what's happening. I don't need to tell you more. The TVs are coming, but so we're still doing a lot of type plug fest things that are necessary to make certain that the industry has a nice runway to take off from. So here we go. The rollout started. You are here. My luggage is somewhere over there. Basically, I'm looking at, I think, Green Bay. I may get this wrong, but I think Green Bay was about to go file for their Sinclair station is going to go live here very shortly, so that's your first. I guess the Nielsen DMA is also talking about the Chicago spectrum. There's something going on down there. Where's Vicky Kipp and Dennis Baldridge? Congratulations. I have to applaud these people because they took the test. And so this is going to be one of those things where there was so much material to cover. I know what you went through because I was helping Luke and Madeline on some of the questions, and it's a tough one to get through, but I think we're going to do better. That's one of the things we're going to be talking about more, because as more of this technology starts to get launched across the United States, it's you guys in the room, and there's too few of us. And I'm just going to say it like this: we're not getting any younger. the hair is catching up. So we're going to submit paperwork, get your budget and schedule. This is everything you know about being able to launch a new service. At the end of the day, it's to get TVs into the hands of consumers. Well, they have to go out and buy them, but the whole point is Tim Carroll's technology is in those TVs. You heard more from Ray about the testing that Pearl's been doing, so I won't belabor the point. Here's the takeaway. ATSC 3.0 is essentially all about the new modulation and less to do about all the other things in the toolbox because it's all based on IP infrastructure. We're going to talk more about this stuff. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of tools in the toolbox, but the main takeaway is you're getting a new transmission interface. You're applying a PLP today in 1.0. It's 19.39. That changes when you go forward. So there's hope for the VHF market where they get what they get today. And it is what it is. And you can't change what the physics are. And so we're going to talk a lot more about how we got to where we're at. Basically, this is a lot to read. But the big takeaway here was the industry had to move to digital at some point because there was the notion of reclaiming some of the spectrum, even back in the early days. And so way before we had repack, the whole point to getting channels proliferated took digital. And everybody was talking about what HD was going to do for everybody. And so basically, HD was the battle cry. Well, at the end of the day, it took an 8VSB transmitter. And yes, there was a lot of talk about launching with CoFDM. But so COFDM was the problem of it was an issue that everybody knows is an issue today. And I just talked to a chief engineer today, and he's talking about turning his transmitter off at 2 o'clock in the morning just so he can see what the guard band looks like of his next nearest neighbor. And it's called adjacent channel interference. Well, the big takeaway from back in 1995 when we were looking at the spec was the problem of adjacent channel interference that was created by COFDM as compared to an 8VSB. So everybody asks, why did we pick 8VSB? Because the adjacent channel interference, because of the amplifiers at the time. Most everybody was running high power IoTs, but there were a lot of many cascaded stages. If you talk to Nick over at Gates Air, he'll tell you what the problem was, and it was because all those stages of gain had splatter, and it created adjacent channel interference. And so the whole point was to make it coexist with the analog so that you could get the digital on the air. Remember, you had two licenses. Well, now we don't have that problem. You don't get a new license. Okay, so we're going to move forward. The whole point is you had to put on this very costly mask filter to make certain you were suppressing the sidebands. So now we have those mask filters in place, and we got crunched into this. Well, here's the new sweet spot that everybody has started to talk about, because most of the current ATSC channel population obviously lives up in the UHF band because that's where everything works. Okay, so now you're left with what's left. So all the low power guys, they got pushed down to the low end, the translators are down there, so forth and so on. So it was, as it was pointed out back in 2013, Charlie Rhodes talked about what the A3P future is. And that's my acronym that I use to describe what ATSC 3.0 physical layer is. A3P is just a term. But so we could load all 7 high VHF channels with ATSC signals if their transmitters are co-sided. Well, how many of you guys are co-sided? Okay, and so the takeaway from this article was it should also work with whatever the ATSC proposes as the next generation. So what happened was here he's advocating for the case for, yeah, you can put all your channels next to each other, and then you got the repack. They saw this. They knew that. And here it comes. So now we had to get what was essentially a much more dense bit packing solution in RF spectrum. And they did. And sure enough, this thing follows the Shannon curve. You've seen this before. You understand what this message is. That green dot, that's where you are today. Until you start ATSC 3.0, all those red choices are these options. These are there's these knobs that you can adjust in the modulation. You didn't have that before. That green dot was it. Okay, and so the whole point was we had to have the efficiency. Well, there's your efficiency, where you can go down low, where if you're on a low V, you have a half a chance of getting through the stucco in a house with an indoor patch antenna about that big. Okay, but otherwise, if you have a nice high power, high tower solution, you can run your PLP way high and you can run faster than 19.39. I do it every day. I basically have a lot of my equipment in the field right now, and everybody that I'm talking to is running in excess of 24 megabits. There's only a few that are not because they're in a Class A solution, but basically everybody's running faster than 20 megabits. At the end of the day, I wanted to leave you with a very firm solution, which is based on what the Telestream guys were telling you, which is everything's an IP and you better have PTP and, you know, that talk, okay? At the end of the day, it looks like an IT cabinet. This is the backside of the rack down in Phoenix. We launched the lighthouse down there for Pearl, and so basically everything's a computer here. There's minor exceptions. There's one or two things in there that are not, but basically, Rich Friedel at Fox said this to me a long time ago. You hire the IT guy, and you teach him television. So when you go to look for new hires, get the kids at the college interested in multimedia, because they don't necessarily get it otherwise. Because, oh yeah, that's right, that's their television. Okay, so what you want is to attract them to be able to learn a little bit of RF physics, and then the next guy that you get will hopefully understand television. But at the end of the day, they introduced a multiplexer. So everybody understands what ATSC 1.0 is about. It was the foray into adding more than one channel. You know, you had an NTSC signal, one channel, SD, you're done. Okay, so then comes digital, and now you have more than one channel. PBS was doing multi-channel from like a long time ago. And then everybody started to figure it out. And now you have more .2 channels than you've ever had. I guarantee you, everybody in this room has added at least one new channel to their multiplex in the last year. Why? Because you make more money. It's that simple. And guess what? It's about to get worse. Channel sharing is a monster. But basically, everybody that was doing 1.0 TV, they understand that there was this encoder, the multiplexer, and off to the modulator, and you're on the air. Well, guess what? I can tell that encoder to do just AVC or HEVC. It doesn't matter because it's software. We're basically doing this today where I have customers that are running multiplexes with 1.0 AVC over the air. Tune in Chicago, you'll find two of them, and they're on a UHF. And he's actually doing some other clever things, like another certain individual in this room who will remain nameless, but he's also doing HEVC. And if you can see it, he would like to hear more about that. But basically, this is the stuff you need to talk about amongst yourselves, because you're going to be working on channel share operations where the input to the process to feed to the stick has to come from one of a different, you know, and that's why you have these three different input pipes. You can have a, you know, a straight video in, which can be IP or SDI. You can have an OTA receiver, or you can take a fiber direct. We did the Portland stations have a very unique solution, because in their city, everybody got a fiber connection up to the Pitcock building, which is one of the mountaintops where all the, there's a majority of the broadcasters are on that, on those set of towers up there. And so they had a very unique solution where everybody was fiber connected to everybody. So it was really easy to get the lighthouses lit up, because of, it was, here's my video over IP, have a nice day, and it's a dark fiber solution. So their security was built in from day one when they put the fibers in the first place. But so they also had to feed low power and translators. But so basically, their implementation was very easy to build out the 1.0s to be able to make the channel share work. Then going forward, then to build the 3.0, we've had to do some other things, but basically we're taking in content from all these different sources now. Some of it is now moving, we have cloud clusters, I guess you could call them, that are feeding in the multiplex from the cloud over SRT into a terminating multiplex at a DMARC using raw internet to be able to feed transmitters now. And so basically the transcoder, encoder, packager, all that stuff is in the cloud now. And so we've moved, in fact, working on another system with Ralph Bakhoven over at Trevini, and he's moving his product into the cloud as well. So at the last step, the gateway is the thing, and Nick talked about this. We're feeding SRT right straight to the transmitter. And so his question was, and there was a couple of them talking about STL security. Well, the reason why SRT is S security, R reliable transport over broadband internet. So the whole point of that was it's baked into the specification. There's nothing saying you can't tunnel A324 inside an SRT pipe. So if you really want super tight security, you can turn on those little levers too. But so all that's to be able to feed the transmitter in the cloud. And so translators are the biggest part of the headache that comes along with all this. If you're the first station in the market, that's great. Guess what? You don't have to worry about converting translators and for the next 5 years, because you're mandated by the FCC to carry ATSC 1.0 in the next 5 years, even though you start your 3.0 today. So that means your translators just have to go tuned to a different location from where that channel comes from. What I mean is, if your translator is fed from an STL today, and you don't have those same channels on that STL that you used to feed it with, you're going to go find the place where you moved it to, because you're channel sharing with other transmitters. So you're going to be having a conversation with the guy you're doing the channel share with. And he's going to say, oh, it's over here on IP address, blah, blah, blah. That's all it is. You're just changing where the pipe came from for the translator market. But so what's going to happen is that over time, most of the transmitters will eventually start to accommodate all the channels replicated simultaneously in 1.0 and 3.0. That's the magic tipping point, because you're maintaining those channels for 5 years, but you're wanting to start the 3.0 operation, but that means you're encoding everything twice. Well, that's the name of the game. So you got the world's most dense encoder, right? And that's what's happening. Everybody's having to, you know, reinvigorate their plants. But so to get the translators off the ground, you're going to want to come up with a new clever scheme to feed them, because everything's an IP stream. This should wake up a few people in the audience. If you're not paying attention, this is the one slide I want you to take away. I can either feed everything from the cloud in your city, USA, or I can have a virtual private cloud running in some big city, USA. And then those can feed IP links either to the cloud, from the cloud, through your microwave links, whatever. And the point is, along the way, all you're doing is you're stripping out the packets that are going to that carrier. What you're doing is you're managing, you've become a head end. All the TV stations are little mini head ends now. The point is, you're feeding, here in Wisconsin, you're feeding a vast network of equipment. Some guy was telling me he's got 5 microwave hops. It's like, yep, this is what's going to happen. It's only a matter of time. So I wrote this paper some time ago. It's basically talking about what we saw was a trend where the number of stations wasn't changing as much. The ownership number of licenses capped out. It was back in, 2012 or something, where the max number of high power station licenses didn't grow. In fact, it started to taper off a little bit. But before that, the number of stations kept growing and growing and growing, but now it's capped out. So now the question is, what do you do if you want to add more channels? This paper discussed the concept of the channel share operation, and it's a very theoretical, pushes the limit, but I basically collapsed inside paper. I did the math to be able to show what it would look like if you took all the stations in a market, and let's say it's spread across 8 transmitters, just a wild number here. I showed how you could collapse 8 of those stations into 5 transmitters and still maintain high quality. So that would free up 3 transmitters. And so now that is now starting to come to roost because of all the channel share operations. Well, one of the techniques we've started to deploy is putting sub-channels in AVC. And so the other part to this paper was making a compromise in profile resolution, so knocking down 1080i to 720, or taking 720s down to SD, that concept. So channel sharing obviously has led to larger pools. I don't know anybody that's running less than like 2 channels anymore. Everybody's doing 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, some. I've got a guy in LA running 2 HD and 17 SDs on 1 ATSC carrier. Yeah, he's nuts. But he's laughing all the way to the bank, because every one of those sub-channels that he's put on the air is like a sublease. And as long as they're paying the bills, he's doing just fine. So it's begun. We knew this day was coming. It just took a little longer than we thought. So of course, what people have discovered is MPEG-2 is pretty much at its limits. What else is there? Well, so A72 was the spec that was drafted by the ATSC committee to support AVC inside 1.0. It comes in three parts. Art Allison had a field day in part three. We didn't need all the very unique piece of signaling that he absolutely went crazy on, but what it showed was it was easy to add extra channels. It was not that hard. It just that you have to change a few things in PSIP to tell the TV. Now what happened? So here we go, fast forward, TV started transmitting, and sure enough, the phone rang. And who was the person that called? It was the person with the coupon receiver. It doesn't support AVC. Remember, that coupon receiver was designed very specifically only to do one thing, and they had to do it at the lowest possible cost. So at the end of the day, it doesn't have all the guts in the chipset. But now I can show you on an Amazon.com website where if you type in ATSC tuner, it's made in China, it's under $40, and guess what? It supports AVC because you can tell where it says it can play multimedia files where you can stick in the USB stick and you can play videos from your, you know, your iPhone and whatever, and it will reproduce it on the television. So those boxes exist because the Mexico market launched some of their television service. This came many years later after we converted in 2009. Mexico launched with AVC. Not all of them, but some of them did. And so that trend has already started in other markets. So, you know, the entrepreneur Chinese guy started making a set-top box and they sell into Mexico because not every TV works. So the point is, the newer TVs, they already started supporting AVC a long time ago, and now even HEVC. So the TVs have actually been out there for some time. They just didn't tell you. It was like a big secret. They wanted everybody to make certain they were buying the next greatest television. They didn't want to tell you that they make one chipset. Ray Folsom told you, your TV is now a computer. It's got one big chip with a huge heat sink on it, and that chip has come at a great cost for development. But that's how they drive their cost down, is to do one chip for a lot of different TVs. That's great news for you guys, but it's like a secret, and you don't know which one has it and which one doesn't. Stay tuned, there's more to come on that. So basically, to make 3.0 work, we had to do channel share. I don't know how all the financials work. That's a lawyer and guns and money. I don't know how they do the agreement. So if you ask me, how do we start a channel share? Well, I know the technical side. I don't know the legal side, unfortunately. So what's MPEG-2? Well, life began a long time ago in H.264. This spec came out because MPEG-2 had limitations. We knew this from a long time ago. The point is, it had double the performance over MPEG-2, which back then was a huge thing because of the performance it took to be able to do that, took a more faster, better chip. But that chip allowed it to do a bunch of different things, and I'm gonna speed through this because this is like a Ron Popeil commercial. AVC, it chops, it dices, it slices, it makes Julian fries. It has way better toolbox inside the codec. And so the point is, that's how you get the compression efficiency. You don't get that in MPEG-2. MPEG-2 stops at a very hard limit, and when you're out of bits, you're out of beer. And the whole point of this is you can do what the guy down in LA is doing so long as you like looking at macro blocks a lot. He gets that, he understands, but his customers don't care. They're on the air, they're happy. At the end of the day, the AVC codec is at your disposal, and then here we go, HEVC. And the next one's coming after that, VVC, and so forth. It's not gonna slow down, it's because the chipsets are getting better, and they will always get better because of Moore's Law. At the end of the day, you get the sharper picture, you get the more efficient, you get the better codec performance by leveraging that technology. So the next steps for ATSC 1.0 we see is gonna be more better satisfied when the way the FCC rule is written, you have to maintain your what was called the primary channel. That primary channel, that language was based on your NTSC channel. So if you were CBS, NBC, Fox, doesn't matter. That channel was an SD channel. As long as you maintain that channel in MPEG-2 you can do whatever you want with the rest of your bandwidth. Because the law was written to be able to allow data casting, all this other wonderful fluffy stuff. Okay, so that meant you could do more. At the end of the day, it turns it into a commercial problem, not a technical problem, because we've already done it. The TVs are supporting it. Most of them are there, just not all of them. So when the phone rings, what do you tell the customer? Well, you ask them, what kind of a TV do you have, and what's your zip code? And what I want you to do is start tracking some of these people. So the day you turn on AVC, you ask them, hey, how old's your TV? And if it was made back in 2009, well, it's 2021. Have you thought about buying a new TV? And so forth and so on. And reference that box from Amazon. I assure you, there are clever ways to solve this problem. You don't have to own it. You just want to be aware of it. So that way, you can get the people to start thinking about upgrading and getting some of the older sets out of the TV, you know, out of the living rooms and stuff like that. But A72 has what we need. It doesn't have a good answer when the phone rings. That's the only limitation. So it's a commercial problem. It's not a technical issue. So I wanted to point this out because you guys are broadcasters. Well, did you know there was a C-band auction? Did you hear about that? So that was for these other clever people that want to do more with the spectrum. Oh yeah, that's right. It's the same cell phone people. Well, so they have this thing out there called CBRS. Have you heard of this? It's a way, thank you, somebody heard about it. This is a way to reach out to the phone, and it's not on your spectrum. It's on their spectrum. But this spectrum is the one that was just, you know, launched just recently. Yes, it puts a little, that's why you have to have microwave filters on your C-band receive dish, by the way. Yeah, you ought to be in Silicon Valley like me. Watch what happens to all your C-band dishes. You're getting a lot of nearby noise. Anyway, there's this notion of a CBRS service which includes incumbent access, priority access, and general authorized access. Well, what's this general authorized access all about? Well, how private LTE works is, and this is, I'm quoting straight from CradlePoint. Okay, this is these people that, you know, make lots more money than I do. Any organization can control its own private cellular network. By deploying localized microtowers, small cells, similar to access points, the operator can act like a scaled-down version of a public cellular network. Wouldn't you like to have a piece of that action? Well, sure. The exception here is the licensed organization. You have to control your OPSEC, your QoS, but with no reoccurring payments to carriers. How would you like not to have to send a check to Verizon to be able to ship your content to phones? Well, here you go. Private LTE networks leverage either licensed spectrum, unlicensed spectrum, or shared spectrum, such as CBRS. Hello, there's your hybrid delivery solution, and it's on spectrum you don't have to own. All you have to do is license it. So this whole clever thing is we're trying to get to these TVs. Okay, these TVs are not going to have cell phone receivers in them, at least not anytime soon. But I wanted to review a couple of things. Here's my lab. You can see I've got the Sony TV, and I've got the Samsung television, and I've got my LG TV and all this kind of stuff, and we're testing captions. This is all good stuff. So the good stuff is, did anybody hear what happened to Locast? Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's just like another Aereo. It was another attack from a side, you know, this was the guy, he was operating like a .org and he was taking donations and yeah, that's your content, my friends. Well, so guess what? Here comes DRM. If you don't know what that is, it's a fancy way of talking about scrambling. Remember those rights issues we were talking about? Well, now you can shut the door. HDR, yeah, somebody said it was all complicated. Oh, yes, it is, because there's more than one. And that's one of the problems with the industry that we have today is you have all these companies that are throwing all their HDR technology at this next thing because they're all licensed. It's all about patents. It is what it is. So you're going to hear more about Dolby Vision, HDR 10, HDR 10 Plus, SL HDR 1, and I can go on and on and on. Guess what's going to happen? They're going to want you guys to transmit all the HDR in every flavor all at once. Good luck. Yeah, let's make certain we have that plug fest, okay? Because I can't wait to see how many TVs we blow up when we turn all that stuff on. And of course, to be able to get HDR, you have to have wide color gamut, so that there's I have a slide on that. But the real important one here is the dynamic ad insert. If you didn't know people were doing ad substitution, the cable company's been doing it for so long, it's nothing new. But they were doing it server side. ATSC has done it client side, meaning the splice is at the consumer. The consumer can opt out, they're still going to get a commercial, but if they want to opt in, we can actually feed them a different commercial. You know what that's worth? Ask your salesman. They'll tell you real quick. That's worth a lot of money. And then there's other things like high frame rate. Yeah, it's coming. We have exposed it here where there's Ultra HD running at 12 gigabit. That's a lot of data running through SDI. I hope you got some fiber in your plant. One of the questions was, how do I get Ultra HD at 12 gigabit through a 10 gig IP link, which is a more common commodity interface. There's a TECO standard that was popularized some time ago, which does a very slight mezzanine compression. So it takes the 12 gig Ultra HD at SMPTE, whatever it is, 424, and it knocks the 12 down to just below 10, so it fits through a 10 gig pipe. So there is a solution for this stuff. But so basically, we need dual 10 gig links to be able to do the higher frame rate stuff. Or you need, so for example, if you have 1080p 60 right now, that's a 3 gig SDI. If you want to go 120 gig, that means you need two of those links running at the same time. So now you got a 6 gig link. Okay, so you see what's happening. High frame rate is going to push your plant way beyond the bandwidth that you had. And so, you know, an Ultra HD, it takes four of the 3 gig SDI links. So you have to have four wires for some of those interfaces. Most of that goes away with a very ubiquitous IP infrastructure. You just put everything in IP, and then you have to understand multicasting. You have to know all that stuff. What's ABR? If you've watched Netflix, you know what I'm talking about. It starts at one bit rate, then it changes to a new bit rate as soon as your network catches up. So we're encoding in profile tiers. An ABR tier is not useful in a broadcast plant because why? You only got one transmitter and you want multiple channels. If you start putting up multiple profiles, you're going to run out of bandwidth real quick. But you can put those other tiers on the internet. Announce that there are other alternate profiles in route, put the one profile over the air, and announce the others that are available. If the TV's connected, hey, I'll let you go get this 720p event in Ultra HD or 1080p or whatever. So that's why we want to mention ABR. Versatile video codec, it's the latest coming thing in video coding compression technology. You're going to hear more about that later. There's also essential video codec. These guys are playing on the licensing terms. They're bringing out the latest in technology. What you'll note is that the VVC codec actually requires more horsepower on the decoder. So back in the early days when MPEG-2 started, they were trying to make the chipset that was the decoder as cheap as possible. Now it's Moore's Law is caught up to, the decoding industry. So that means we can do more work inside the decoder now. So that means VVC can leverage certain things if the decoder can do certain things. And we weren't able to do this before. You'll hear more about this. It's come back next year. I wanted to touch on this just so everybody understands. Wide color gamut gives me a color palette that allows me to map more accurately into 10-bit video. This is one of the questions on the test. Your HEVNC encoder for ATSC 3.0 runs in main 10. There is no more 8-bit codec anymore. It's all main 10. Well, so the point of this is I don't lose any of the mapping of all the color palette because there's more bits of data of resolution across this color volume space. So the point is, now I've got the color accuracy that has the ability to, you know, more sync up with what the eye can see. The eye is that whole area. Your human visual system, everybody's eyes is pretty much the same, but your rods and cones can see this whole spectrum. The point is we've captured more of that area inside the new spec, which is Rec 2020, to capture more closely, more accurately what the eye sees. So hybrid delivery. I wanted to touch on this. Boy, we're running out of time. This will be quick. So the big takeaway here is for everybody that's running a single transmitter today, high tower, high power, you can also publish or duplicate your programming to the cloud. So that's a hybrid. Multi-tower SFN with two or more transmitters also publishes. You can have boutique channels to the CDN. But the multi-tower SFN is, you're doing that because of coverage, and so you're probably one of the more bigger, larger stations in a market, and you're just trying to make certain you have better penetration into the homes. But it's the same application as a single high tower. And then there's the people that have a single frequency that move their entire operation into the cloud. It's already begun. So I have channels that are playing out in the cloud into a encode, transcode, multiplex, streaming output through SRT, adding PSIP and EAS at the edge, and there's your transmitter. And so this has already started to be, it's begun. Then a multi-frequency where you can, and I don't know if David Folsom mentioned this, there was some work done by Etri, that is this company over out of Japan, that they have the ability to synchronize two transmitters. So they look like one big virtual transmitter, but it's actually two different carriers. And they don't have to be next to each other in spectrum. They can be VHF, UHF, that kind of thing. But the point is, you can now bond those two carriers. And if this one's carrying 24 megabits, and this one's carrying 24 megabits, you share a virtual PLP between them, so you subtract out a little bit of overhead bandwidth, and so now you got the, you know, a little bit more than 22 megabits between two transmitters. That's 44 megabits. That's a DS3. Well, that's a small cable head end. If you have 44 megabits, you can put up every channel in 1080p and then some at the same time. So the point here is, this is not yet. I think it remains to be seen what's going to happen in Wisconsin. Not everybody's running out to, you know, make these transmitter deals, but it's bound to happen. With that much horsepower, you can put up a Cineplex of Ultra HD. It's that much horsepower. The other one I wanted to point out is the combination of, you know, tagging on to LTE technology. So whatever you don't transmit over your ATSC transmitter, you can transmit over a CBRS, or you can, you know, synchronize those things. Last but not least is the ATSC translator co-located with WISP and or, you know, Starlink, here it comes. So the big rural market is not left in the dark, but your translator is part of the solution. The other part comes from however they get their internet. So basically, it's to feed the new TVs. This is, okay, I need to put on my Karnak hat. This is a little about what we see. Coming down the pike, you can see here Lansing, that's markets greater than 100. Below that, you see Green Bay, market 50 and it's greater, and then Milwaukee, market 20. So across the board, you can see there's this procession of technology as time passes on. So this year, next year, you'll see only these unique cases where there's a land, you know, some stations are self-duopoly, and so they are a natural pair to be able to start up a 3.0. It just depends on if they can take all the ATSC 1.0 traffic off one of the two sticks and merge it into the multiplex of the other transmitter. Well, there's your self-channel share. And then you can light off in 3.0. So Green Bay, it's coming soon. I think the issue here in Wisconsin is probably going to be along the Canadian border. They have to be ready to start seeing the new stuff. But I am assuming they're following us. I'm not the guy at the IETF level, but I would assume that Canada is going to follow suit at some point. Obviously, Chicago, they've already announced dark blue on the map that you saw earlier. They're going to be a big influence. As they light off, it eventually the TVs will show up at Costco. And what's the first thing you see when you walk in the door at Costco? It's a brand new television. It's like, wow, it's in your face. So once those TVs show up in Costco, then there's your tipping point. That's what's going to force the issue of, hey, when are we going to start seeing new signals? You'll get those calls. It's going to be the early adopter guy that's going to be the one calling you. But as you can see, as time goes on, I'm making some predictions on where channel shares over here at 2024, the channel shares percentage of channels will be way above 70%. So just about every TV station in the United States, except for about, some 30% of them, are not going to be in a channel share. Most every station will be in a channel share at some point. It's just a matter of time. Because they're not making any more spectrum. Where else are you going to go get a license from? And so at the end of the day, more gold areas will show up on the map, reaching farther into rural areas. So it's just a matter of time. And so what we're predicting is that somewhere in the middle of 2023, that's when this tipping point's going to show up. You'll hear more data from the Pearl guys because they have more eyes on the problem kind of thing. The prize is when you'll see the TV show up in the commercial retail stores. We don't know when that's exactly going to happen, but it may be this fall. Maybe it's next fall. It's just a matter of time. So connecting with the broadband segment, we touched on a lot of this stuff. You're going to become friends with an ISP real quick, or a CDN provider like Akamai. If you aren't already, you probably will be very shortly. The Dash Packager, everybody knows how that works. That's how you deliver segments through the internet. When you do internet television, they know exactly your IP address because everything's unicast. And the CDN is the guy that's sitting there making copies of your stream to feed all those different IP addresses. With that IP address, you too can be like Google. I think I said this last year, two years ago. We know exactly where they live when we know their IP address. It's not a big secret anymore. And so the feed from the broadcaster to a CDN will integrate some combination of DRM and watermarking right off the bat. When you start streaming, you're going to be learning things like geofencing and all this kind of stuff because you serve a market and you don't want to serve beyond because that would get you in trouble. But broadcasters can publish channels, different service layers. Once you're into the publishing business, you can turn on way more stuff. It's just a matter of what do you want to do with your signal. Okay, so most but not all, the products that we've been selling into the market, they all run on servers. There is no bespoke ASIC anymore. It's all running on Intel chassis. They boot up differently, obviously, because it's a server. And all these servers come with 10 gig ports now. So it's just a matter of plug and play. You plug these things in, they look like big pizza boxes. And they have lots of loud fans. We've moved everything into the virtual environment. Long ago, this decision was made. It was only a matter of time. And so we've moved every single one of our products, except for the decoders, into bare metal, VMware, Dockers, all that stuff. So that way we can offer SaaS solutions, virtual private clouds, all that kind of stuff. It's just a matter of time before your infrastructure hits this wall of technology. All new video production runs over Ethernet. Yep, I have hybrid solution running in the lab today where I have local channels that are coming off the cross point from master control as SDI, but I'm also taking in IP at the same time, transcoding that content, adding the local channels and the distance channels into one big multiplex output for 1.0, and then I can make a copy of that and send those packaging output 3.0 at the same time. It's just a matter of numbers of cores. It's everything you know about trying to run a TV station is, well, you just need more processing power and learn how to use Wireshark real quick. What's next? We talked on this. More work is going on in the DRM, HDR plug fests. Number of households reach, well, it's expected to top 75% this year. This is the first. It's not to say that all the channels are available, but this is where everybody's starting to light off. Next year, we're going to see more cloud-based delivery solutions because it's real easy to spin those up like that. You don't have to wait for delivery. I just get online and I dial up Azure, I run a cluster, and just tell me what the content is, and off we go. Last but not least, some of us are headed towards retirement. I wish we could be doing this at a college, because the youngest person in the room yesterday that I talked to was 23 years old, and he was happy to be here. I wish I could say more about that about my son. I wish I could say more about the high school students that are coming out of class, because I bet you just more than half the people in this room are halfway to retirement. So let's just hope that this message will start to resonate with younger people. Physics is the thing. TV is about physics. It's because it's high power RF. What's different about it? Nothing. It's free television. Well, how does the internet compete with free? Well, YouTube tries, but then they keep dumping in commercials. Let me summarize with this. Dirty air chains create hate in your mask filter. Stop doing that. Try to get a better transmitter. You're going to need a better transmitter. You're going to need more power. 3.0 takes more power. When picture quality is reduced, the stress on the StatMux pool will increase. So basically, people that get these dirty feeds from their channel share partners, the better you can do with the feed, the better. So basically, the StatMux pool is impacted more when the clean feeds are being hammered by the dirty feeds, and I think you guys know what I'm talking about there. New technology in the TVs will make your picture look more spectacular because they have way more processing power in them just within the recent 3-4 years. The chipset in the TVs know how to do this upscaling. That's why they're selling Ultra HD, and now 8K TVs are showing up. Not that there's 8K content, but that their upscaler chips do a really good job. And then this is an ATSE thing. So S41 committee, we just started work on an NPP. The work is beginning to include VVC. ATSC 3.0 isn't even lit off in all the markets here in the U.S., and we're already talking about including the next video codec, H.266, okay? So it's coming, and it's because there's these guys that want to sell everybody an 8K TV. And then I want to leave you guys with this. I've always had this conversation off and on with people, what's ATSC 3.0 worth? It's advertising. It's the back channel. And if you're doing dynamic ad insert, you have that back channel capability. And with that technology, you have the ability to see who's taking the ad. That's worth a lot of money to your advertisers, because now you can get more pinpoint. What do you think Google and Facebook are doing? They know exactly where the commercials are going. And with that, I don't know if we have much time. I'm holding you up from lunch. Hey, I did pretty good, right?
You did wonderful. Thank you, Joel.